ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A nation united in grief, or a community divided by war in the Middle East. This is the Religion and Ethics Report. Hello there, Andrew West with you on ABC Radio National, ABC Listen, and across the Pacific on Radio Australia. Today, one issue, but two guests who differ sharply over the visit to Australia this week by Israel's President Isaac Herzog. The federal government invited President Herzog to Australia largely as a gesture of comfort to the Jewish community. It is traumatised after December's anti-Semitic attack in Bondi that left 15 people dead. But Isaac Herzog has also faced mass demonstrations from protesters. Josh Bornstein is a prominent Melbourne lawyer, free speech advocate and Jewish Australian. He's against the visit. Jeremy Liebler, whom you'll hear later, also a lawyer, is president of the Zionist Council of Australia. First, though, Josh Bornstein.
I think the major issue is that although the Prime Minister has made clear that the invitation was to be above politics and was to try and promote healing, the presence of the President of Israel at this particular time is going to have the complete opposite effect. It will be a lightning rod for disagreement, dissent. I fear it will, rather than assist the fight against anti-Semitism, it will damage that fight.
The government says that President Herzog is going to bring a measure of comfort to Australia's Jewish community. Josh, I have absolutely no doubt that you were as repulsed and as mournful and as angry about the Bondi massacre. I have no doubt about that. In fact, you've said that there's been an appalling rise of anti-Semitism. Why don't you just say, look, I don't like Herzog's politics, but if it brings some comfort to an aggrieved, grieving community, just let it be.
As you say, the Bondi massacre was sickening. It sickened me literally. I can't put it any more bluntly than that. But what the invitation does is ask us to engage in a remarkable act of cognitive dissonance, to pretend that Israel has not obliterated Gaza, crushed Gaza, and whether you use the word genocide or not, the numbers are staggering. The suffering is extraordinary. The bombing and military campaign has been pitiless. What this visit does is ask all of us to pretend none of that's happening, to pretend the bombing isn't still occurring, to pretend that the Palestinian babies are not still dying, so that the president, who has himself been cited by the International Court of Justice in connection with charges of genocide that have been brought, can come to Australia and provide comfort to those impacted by Bondi. This does not comfort many Jews. It appalls many Jews. The Jewish community is not a monolith. It is made up of a huge variety of different types of Jews, secular, religious, Zionist, anti-Zionist, post-Zionist, with a great range of views, many of whom are very, very upset that a man accused by, at the very highest levels of our international legal system, of inciting genocide, and who is the president of a country facing the most serious charge that can be laid under international law of genocide, is here at this time.
But they remain accusations, though, Josh. I mean, you are a very formidable and respected lawyer. I have no doubt that in your long career you have asserted the principle of innocence until proven guilty, and they remain unresolved accusations. And Herzog says his comment was taken selectively. He also pointed to other comments where he said there are many, many Gazans who oppose Hamas, who are opposed to what's happened.
I agree that the principles you invoke are important. At the same time, there can be no more serious crime than genocide. A United Nations Human Rights Council Commission of Inquiry has found that Herzog did incite genocide. Although it's not a binding legal decision, it's very important. There is an overwhelming consensus of genocide scholars who now say Israel has engaged in genocide. And putting aside the G word, there is no doubt there has been massive loss of civilian life in Gaza, and that suffering that is continuing is unimaginable, with human rights organisations not being able to provide aid and continue being blocked. These are all very serious matters. We cannot just simply look away and pretend none of this has happened.
We can't look away, can't we, though, look at it in a more nuanced way? Can't we look at Herzog's history as someone who has been committed to a two-state solution? In fact, perhaps his position as president is effectively powerless, but can't we look at his history as someone who has been involved in dialogue, who has been involved in reconciliation? Because that appears to be what the federal government has done. They don't step back from the positions they've taken on recognising a Palestinian state, which have angered Herzog and particularly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but they've also seemed to be able to accommodate Herzog's past as someone who has been more committed to reconciliation. Can't we look to that as well?
Again, you're asking us in the community to cherry pick, because Herzog was invited on the 23rd of December by Prime Minister. One day earlier, the Israeli Security Cabinet endorsed the establishment and recognition of 19 new settlements in the West Bank, illegal settlements. Herzog himself has supported the settlement project and now considers it crucial to Israel's security. He's on the record supporting the expansion of settlements. So whatever his past may be, what we are now dealing with is his conduct much more recently, and which is being considered by the International Court of Justice and has already been condemned by a United Nations Special Commission of Inquiry. We shouldn't be asked to pretend to look away, to simply disregard these acts that are an absolute offence to anyone with any sense of morality, and pretend they simply haven't happened. They have happened. When Hamas launched its terrorist attack on civilians in Israel on 7 October 2023, I was then a two-state solution Zionist. I believed that there should be two states. I no longer know what I think. The notion that there will be two states is over. Israel has put paid to any notion of two states. Israel's expansion of control into the West Bank, its expulsion, which continues every day, which Herzog will be here, has rendered that aspiration entirely impossible and irrelevant. For many Jewish people, we are seeing that possibility, the possibility that Palestinians may live in equality and with dignity, completely being annihilated by the acts of Israel. And we are asked to pretend that all hasn't happened, to turn away from it, to turn away from morality, and live an entirely different world for the purposes of this visit. That's not possible for many people in the Jewish community, and I don't think it's possible for most of the Australian community.
Yeah. Isn't it possible, though, to look at it this way, that Herzog still represents a Jewish state, and that Jewish state, with all its failures, acknowledged failures, even by strong Zionists, is still supported by 86% of Australian Jewry, according to Monash University surveys. I acknowledge that there is a wide variety of opinion in the Australian Jewish diaspora. Many of those people have been on this program. But it'd be a stretch to say that most Australian Jews do not feel some affinity with, at the very least, the idea of the State of Israel. And maybe that's all Herzog represents, just that idea of the State of Israel, and maybe in its original conception of 1948, which was a state for all its citizens. It may have evolved into something harsher since then, but isn't that really what Herzog's visit could represent?
It's very difficult to generalise about the Jewish community because of its incredible diversity. But I will say this about it. There is now more than ever a schism in the Jewish community between those who would advocate I think in fanatical terms, for blind loyalty and blind adherence to supporting Israel, regardless of its conduct, regardless of the way it has treated the Palestinian population. That schism now operates on at least three levels. There's a generational divide. I think as younger Jewish people in the Australian community are rebelling against what they were taught at school, what they were taught at home, what they were taught at synagogue if they went to synagogue. There are those like me who aren't of the younger generation, but who took the lesson of the Holocaust never again as a lesson of universality. And as I said, there are pro-Israel lobbyists who are very successfully getting their way by applying pressure, whether it's to universities, to arts organisations, to musical companies, or even in this case, to the federal government. The common theme when those organisations apply the pressure is that the organisation that succumbs ultimately does something perverse. So that's why you find newspaper outlets or media outlets censoring staff. That's why you find arts organisations engaged in censorship. And in this case, unfortunately, the federal government has succumbed to that sort of pressure and invited someone accused of inciting genocide at a time when the Prime Minister has been very firm about a number of things. One, that we need to promote social cohesion. Two, we need to adhere to the rule of law. And three, he has just recently sought from the Parliament the introduction of a new law criminalising incitement of violence against a group based on race. How are we to regard all of those worthwhile commitments from the Prime Minister in light of the photo opportunities that are now going to be shared between himself and the President and the Governor-General and the President of Israel?
Yeah, but there'll still be photo opportunities with the leader of a government, this in this case Australia's government, that has recognised a Palestinian state and has been very critical of Israel's conduct of the war. It will still be a government that doesn't resile from those criticisms and yet, as a gesture to an aggrieved wounded community, has said we will welcome the President of Israel. I mean, these things can be held in tension, can't they?
They can be held in tension, but if the Prime Minister was to publicly condemn what has happened in Gaza and the West Bank, was to publicly challenge Israel about these matters during this visit, then perhaps you could hold them in tension, perhaps. I still find it difficult to conceive of Prime Minister Albanese meeting with the head of Iran. Israel is now a pariah state, other than
a handful of
countries, including the US, that provide support to it.
Yeah, look,
it
just
is,
yeah, but just finally,
a pariah state around the world.
Yeah, just finally though, Josh. I mean, that is a bit of a stretch. You can't get rid of the government in Iran. It is conceivable that not only will Benjamin Netanyahu's government be defeated democratically, a court may send Benjamin Netanyahu to jail. I mean, this is inconceivable in Iran. That is a bit of a stretch.
There is an acknowledged retreat from democracy in Israel, an attempt by the Israeli government to overturn the independence of the judiciary. There are serious and credible allegations about torture that is routinely inflicted on Palestinian prisoners. Again, you are requiring me to disregard the conduct of Israel in the West Bank and Gaza, which has no place in a democracy. I don't accept that Israel is a healthy democracy, and you have far more faith than me in what might happen at an election, because Israel is in rapid retreat from its democratic past.
Josh Bornstein is a lawyer. He's also the author of a new book. It's called Working for the Brand, How Corporations Are Destroying Free Speech. Josh, thanks for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Much appreciated. Thank you.
And you're on ABC Radio National with me, Andrew West. Well, Jeremy Liebler is also a lawyer. He's also the president of the Zionist Federation of Australia. And at the ABC Religion and Ethics website, Jeremy has written a riposte to Josh Bornstein's piece. Jeremy joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Why, despite the protests that this visit has clearly caused, do you still believe the visit by Israeli President Herzog helps rebuild community cohesion?
From the perspective of the Jewish community, we've endured close to 2.5 years of weekly protests almost every main capital city. I'm a believer in free speech, and people who wish to protest peacefully should be allowed to do so. But the practical reality is that in many cases, these protests have effectively made the central CBD and certainly Sydney and Melbourne off limits for the Jewish community. And so I don't believe that a country's response to the worst terrorist attack in modern Australian history should be to be led by a group of, I think, quite extreme protesters. Instead, I think it's appropriate to look to what is actually going to bring comfort to the victims and their families and the community that has been most impacted by this horrible terrorist attack.
And it was, look, unquestionably an anti-Semitic pogrom. We said that on this program when it occurred just after the 14th of December. I understand that for a significant majority of Jewish Australians, they will welcome this as a gesture of solidarity from the President of Israel. But, Jeremy, do the feelings of Palestinian Australians matter? Because they may well be traumatised by the visit by the head of state of a country that is engaged in undeniably a fierce retaliation. Now, it was a retaliation for an obscene terrorist attack, to be sure, but the Israeli military has now accepted the figure from the Gaza Health Ministry that there's at least 70,000 dead. Do the feelings of Palestinian Australians matter here?
First, on some of the facts there, yes, the military has accepted 70,000 people have been killed. What they don't accept is Hamas statistics that all 70,000 were civilians. If one accepts Hamas statistics, there was not one single combatant killed on the Palestinian side. But I think what you're asking in relation to the feelings of the Palestinian Muslim community, of course they are relevant and they are entitled to express their views. As I said, I'm a believer in free speech. But what we've experienced is the worst terrorist attack on the Jewish community, where 15 people, I think 14 or 13 of whom were Jewish, were murdered. That followed, you know, what I would describe as a summer of terror, where synagogues were bombed, where Jewish leaders' homes were bombed, where Jewish childcare centres were bombed. It is the Jewish community to whom the city has been off limits for the last 2.5 years. It is the Jewish community whose schools have armed guards standing outside. You can walk very freely into a mosque, into an Islamic school, into Palestinian community centres. There is not a single security guard outside. And that, I'm very pleased to say, is because clearly there are not ongoing visible threats. That's not to say there are not instances of Islamophobia. In this country, there are, and they should be addressed. But Australia has just experienced this horrific terrorist attack directed at the Jewish community. So if the response is from Josh Bornstein or from anybody else to say, well, what about the Palestinian community? I would say they've had the last 2.5 years to express their views, and they seem to have done so by way of violent protests that have often incited hatred and violence.
Well, that's a big call, though, to make against an entire Palestinian community. I mean, Jeremy, you responded in your essay, very thorough essay, you responded to Josh Bornstein's essay, and he contains a case study here. What would you say to the school teacher, Sami Muammar? More than 100 members of his family have been killed in Gaza. I can't see him being comforted by President Herzog's presence, even though I acknowledge that President Herzog's presence is a strong gesture of solidarity with Jewish Australians. What do you say to Sami Muammar? He's a school principal. He's got nothing to do with the Hamas atrocity.
There are a few things that I'd say. The first thing I'd say is that Bondi was an attack on Australia. As I'm sure you know, it was targeted at the Jewish community, all of whom are very proud, upstanding Australian citizens. This was an attack on Australia, on Australian values. If anyone, whether or not they have their own trauma or they don't have their own trauma, is offended by a gesture of solidarity and comfort, which is entirely and very clearly not political, and the president has said that himself. I was there yesterday when he laid a wreath at Bondi, and he said, I am here to bring comfort to Australians following this terrorist attack. Implicit in your question here is a failure to differentiate between horrible suffering and civilian casualties that occur in war when a country is acting in self-defense And, for example, acts of terrorism like Bondi directed at innocent people. Mm. There is fundamentally a difference. And I think if a society fails to differentiate between those two, it's a pathway to a not very good ending for anyone concerned, especially Australia.
I know that President Herzog's comments, which have been reported as part of a deposition to the International Criminal Court, are highly contested. But look, what's not contested is certain symbolic things he did. He signed a missile that was later dropped in Gaza. I think he later said, or maybe that was a bit clumsy of me. I mean, are these the sort of messages of reconciliation that you would hope to receive from the President of Israel?
What President Herzog has said is that he signed a shell 6 days after the 7th of October, as we were still finding out, and Israelis were still finding out, which of their friends and family were murdered, were raped, or were being held hostage, either alive or dead, in Gaza. He acknowledged that it was, I don't think the word he used was clumsy. I think he said it was not the wise decision. He wouldn't make that decision again because of the optics. And I agree with that. In terms of what he said, it's not contested. One can go on YouTube and watch the entire interview. He said very clearly when it was put to him, what about the innocent Palestinians in Gaza? This is 6 days after the 7th of October. He responded to say the civilians, which is true, elected a Hamas government. That's not a question, that is fact.
Yeah, but a very long time ago, and part of the indictment against Hamas is that it hasn't allowed an election since. Well, that was very long time ago, Jeremy.
Yes.
And
the
indictment, Israel's indictment against Hamas is correct.
Yes,
it hasn't had and so we can't really test public sentiment, can we?
No. What he said was, is that they were elected and civilians were aware of what was going on. I don't think anyone contests that. There was broad popular support for Hamas in Gaza. When he was then asked, this is all on YouTube, a follow-up question, are you saying, effectively, this is a call for civilian for collective punishment? He explicitly said, absolutely not. Civilians need to be protected. But Israel is fighting a war for its survival against a barbaric terrorist organization. A barbaric terrorist organization that is inspired by the same ideology as those two individuals that murdered 15 Australians in Bondi.
Well, look,
and that's what Australians need to recognise.
Yeah, look, there's never been an apology for Hamas on this program. I can assure you of that. But look, let's go to something that's not ambiguous. President Herzog, I know that he has a reputation and a record on the centre-left. I know that he has spoken about peace in the past. But more recently, he described settlements on the West Bank as the cornerstone of Zionism and Judaism. Now, let me quote to you what the minister who's responsible for those settlements says, that these new settlements will deepen our roots in all the regions of the land of Israel and bury the idea of a Palestinian state. Doesn't this mean that President Herzog, for all his admirable record in the past, is joining that decision to bury a Palestinian state, bury the idea of a Palestinian state? He's foreclosing on it.
No, it's not. And that's for two reasons. First and foremost, I heard him yesterday at a press conference asked a question about a two-state solution, and he made the point that we need to reach a resolution with the Palestinians, but the aftermath now of after October the 7th has changed the equation. And what that means is, and this is a reflection of the region, that Israel has learned from some of the mistakes of Oslo. I'm a very strong believer in a two-state solution. I believe that's in both Israeli interests and Palestinian interests. But we can't have a two-state solution with a terrorist organisation, Hamas. Australia has recognised that. This is why the Albanese government, notwithstanding the fact that they proceeded with a recognition of Palestine, have said they're not going to take any further steps in relation to embassies or representation or diplomatic status until Hamas is completely removed from power and there is a pathway to democratic elections within the relevant Palestinian territories. President Herzog is a man that is respected from both sides of politics. He was the former head of the Labour opposition. It's why he has a relationship with Prime Minister Albanese, with the Foreign Minister, with Richard Marles, because through the Labour, world Labour movement, there were always very strong relationships.
Look, just finally, Jeremy, I understand that President Herzog is a symbolic leader. He does, however, have the power to commission governments. That's in the basic law. I looked that up on the Israeli presidency website. Now, part of the government that he has commissioned includes a man called Itamar Ben-Gvir. Itamar Ben-Gvir, before he entered the Knesset, before he became a minister in the current government, had on his wall a photograph of Barak Goldstein, a man who murdered 29 Palestinians at prayer. What does this say about a government that contains a man like that?
I consider Ben-Gvir to be a racist and an extremist, and I don't believe he should have any role.
But he is in the government.
In the Israeli government. But where I must correct you is that is not a decision that is within the power of the president. Israel is a democracy. And the president, yes, has to support the formation of government from the party or the group, the coalition that is most likely to be able to form a majority in the Knesset. This is the price of living in a democracy. You know, we have certain parties in Australia at the moment polling at very high percentages who over various periods of time have expressed, I think what most people would agree, are pretty racist views on certain issues.
Indeed.
That is not a reflection of the whole of society. I expressed my objection at the time, as did many in the Jewish community and as did many in Israel, about the inclusion of someone like Ben-Gvir in the government. Thankfully, he was excluded from the war cabinet and had no role in the war. But frankly, the most damage that Ben-Gvir has done is in his inflammatory rhetoric that has effectively brought so much stain to the reputation of Israel. But unfortunately, this is the price of living in a democracy, and perhaps the price of living in a democracy where a very significant proportion of the population are surrounded by, you know, multiple enemies who have sought to destroy it.
Yeah, I know you've spoken out against Ben-Gvir. I know that. I'm just wondering, could President Herzog have simply not said to Benjamin Netanyahu, I won't commission a government with this man in it?
I don't believe as a matter of law that he has the ability to do that.
He couldn't have sent Netanyahu back to the Knesset to say find another partner to make up the majority?
Look, I'm not an expert in Israeli constitutional law, but my understanding absolutely is that his role is to support the individual, the party that is most likely to be able to form a majority. Remember, this was after the fourth or the fifth election within 6 or 7 months in Israel, you know, where there was massive instability. So, you know, there are obviously many other considerations there. But I think you would agree that one can go through the history of many, many politicians, especially ones that have been around for a very long time, and nitpick things that they have said or done that, you know, either in context or out of context, were not appropriate.
Yeah, but how many have deified a mass murderer?
Well, President Herzog.
Oh, not Herzog,
has
absolutely not
done so.
We're talking about Ben-Gvir.
I mean, he was the leader of the opposition. He was Benjamin Netanyahu's political opponent here. And this is a man who has come, and, you know, we have the benefit of having this conversation now after he's actually arrived in Australia. I attended an event that was packed. There were, I think, over 5,000 people at the ICC in Sydney. Not just the Jewish community, but mostly the Jewish community. And it was uplifting. And while there were protesters attacking police, throwing things at police, breaching very clear rules and orders from the authorities, there were 4,000 members of the community mourning the death, the murder of 15 Australians who were killed for no reason other than they were at a Jewish event.
Jeremy Liebler, President of the Zionist Federation of Australia and a prominent Melbourne lawyer, thank you for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you can read the dueling articles from Jeremy Liebler and Josh Bornstein at the ABC Religion and Ethics website. That's it for this episode. Follow us at ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to producer Mandy Roberts and Simon Branthwaite. I'm Andrew West. Join us again for the Religion and Ethics Report.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.